Hey, trivia fans! Looking for an exciting and unforgettable way to add some fun and friendly competition to your events or team-building sessions? Last Call Trivia has you covered. Our unique web-based app allows players to participate individually or as a team, making it easier than ever to bring people together, spark curiosity, create connections, and make lasting memories. Host your own trivia anytime with our new subscription, and experience the best in interactive entertainment. Even remote attendees can play along. Check out lastcalltrivia.com/shop for more information.
Welcome to the Last Call Trivia Podcast. I'm your trivia host, James Flippin, and I'm so happy to have all of our listeners join in on our trivia team today. Our favorite part of Trivia Night is, you guessed it, the discussion that the questions spark and the connections those conversations create. That's why our trivia players, you can count on this one, will be showing their work. They got to talk through the thought process behind each of their answers as we play our trivia game. And speaking of our trivia players, I'm joined by the trivia team that our Instagram followers were kind enough to name Wild Moose Chase.
Follow the tracks.
Yep. Wild Moose Chase. So let's get to know those players a little bit better. First and foremost, the Federal Reserve once asked for his hand in marriage. It's DJ Taylor.
I'm still hung up on how I'm foremost here. If that's true, we are all in trouble.
She's once, twice, three times a lady. It's Kelly Kitko.
James, I don't know how you possibly resisted the urge to do that like Lionel Richie. Come on. Please.
You know, I probably just know that I don't have the pipes to pull that off, so I'd rather the listeners at home, you know, like just imagine what she's once, twice, three times a lady. Okay, well, Kelly Kitko, we got to know her.
He amazing.
Grew up on the street, but was finally adopted by a bald-headed millionaire. Now, he's Omen Thomas Sayed.
Mr. Flippin, my secret decoder ring says it's time for trivia.
Oh, you little orphan, you little street urchin. Well, in today's podcast, we'll be challenging the Last Call Trivia team, Wild Moose Chase, with questions that previously appeared in Last Call Trivia shows in bars and restaurants around the country. But this here podcast show has two rounds of trivia. There's three questions per round and a bonus question sandwiched in between the two rounds. A final question closes out the gaming proceedings. Beforehand, some digital housekeeping, if you wouldn't mind. If you enjoyed today's show, we'd love for you to leave us a 5-star rating on your streaming service of choice. And if you'd like to learn more about all of Last Call Trivia's products and services, visit lastcalltrivia.com for more ways to get your trivia fix. Round number one now. I'll read each question aloud. DJ, Kelly, and Omen, they have 3 minutes to discuss and decide on an answer. They also, in addition to their answer, need to submit a point wager with each question. And they've got three options to choose from. They can use them in any order, but they can only use them once. The options are 1 point, 3 points, and 6 points. The idea being you save that six, hopefully, or maybe you use it right away, whatever, if you think you really know the answer to one of these here questions. Round number one's categories now: mascots, states, and quotes.
Oh. All right.
Mascots. What head Keebler elf can be found running the bakery known as the Hollow Tree Factory?
Jeez.
Head Keebler elf. He runs the factory, the Hollow Tree Factory.
I can envision this. I can visualize the commercials of you kind of go inside the Hollow Tree and all the Keebler elves are making biscuits or whatever they do in there. But I don't know what they're called.
He had a name. Well, I don't know if they all had a name, but he definitely had a name.
Is Jeremiah Jenkins or Jeremiah something like that?
Awfully specific for someone who a second ago didn't think that they had names. I mean, from memory, I feel like it's one of those things that if I heard it, I would recognize it. I'm not recognizing Jeremiah Jenkins, let me tell you that much. But like, I felt like it was very simple, like Billy. I mean, it's not Billy, but like
Billy, the head elf foreman of the Stump Factory.
Yeah.
By the way, Omen, your J.J. Jenkins might have a Disney connection. I think that J.J. Fate was a character in a number of Disney shorts involving Donald Duck and bad luck. So maybe that's what you're channeling there with your Jeremiah Jameson.
There's also Leroy Jenkins of the meme fame.
Yes. Leroy Jenkins.
Okay, let's get back to the elves because we're going to run out of time.
Thank you, Kelly.
Okay, so head Keebler elf. Let's just name things that would be good for an elf that either go with Keebler or go with cookies or go with elf.
Munch.
I feel like it was a human boy's name. So like Kevin, Kylie.
I like Kevin. No, I think you're onto something with it. I think you're onto something with it being like a K. That's where I was thinking. For some reason, in my mind, it was a J.
Calvin.
Calvin the elf. Calvin the head elf.
Crisper.
Oh,
crispy. Crispin.
Crispin. I mean, I think we'd remember that from Crispin Glover, but crisp.
Crunch.
Crispy, crunchy. Okay, yeah. Let's go with last call. And...
I think I vote Kevin.
Nyarf, yes, let's go with Nyarf.
Yeah.
I vote Kevin for one fudge filling.
Wow. Kelly?
I have nothing better to offer.
I like Nyarf for
Nyarf has a Nyarf charm.
James, we're going Nyarf. for one point.
Okay. All right, so mascots. What head Keebler elf can be found running the bakery known as the Hollow Tree Factory? You guys put it back and forth with Kevin. You thought about it for one point, Yarnf. And actually, guys, it does start with an E. So if you were...
Elmer?
Nope, not Elmer. It's Ernie.
Ernie!
Oh. Ernie. Yeah.
I think if we hadn't run actually, out of time, we would come around to that.
Maybe so. Nope. Yeah, maybe so. Over the years, by the way, other elves have appeared in companies' ads, including Flo, Elmer, Buckets, Roger, Leonardo, Fast Eddie, Sam, Doc, Zach, Casey, Professor, and Zoot. And they all have different roles, by the way. Buckets, for example, covers the cookies and fudge.
But there was an Elmer.
There was an Elmer.
He wasn't the head elf.
All right,
elf,
there you
he
go.
He wasn't the head elf.
No.
And also.
Well, you know, the elven hierarchy is so convoluted, Omen. It's so difficult to follow.
Exactly. It's hard to.
It's
anyway,
very malleable.
Union rules, and there's a bunch of, like, work stoppages in the 80s. I mean, you can't
there's
really
all
keep
kinds
track.
Of labor disputes, and, you know, whatever. Let's just move on. States is next. Team, what state in the contiguous U.S. has the biggest difference in elevation between its highest and lowest points?
Oh, that's easy.
Is it?
For me, I've been to the highest and the lowest. Sure. Yes.
So for places that have low elevation, I'm thinking it is probably some place that has a seashore, a sea line.
Give you a hint.
Coastline.
While this state has a coastline, the lowest point in this state is not on the ocean or near the ocean.
Oh, interesting.
You want me to give you another hint? There's a picture on my wall right behind me of the spot.
Well, I'm guessing it's California.
Well, that's incidental to the fact that there's a photo of it, yes.
Is that White Sands National Park?
That is Badwater Basin, which is a part of Death Valley. And it happens to be the lowest point in the United States.
How far below sea level is it?
Minus 236 feet. I just made up that number, but let's go with it.
But it's a couple hundred feet below sea level?
Yeah.
And why?
Well, that's part of the reason why it's such a death trap, is that its elevation and geography combine to create the conditions that generate or retain so much heat. The wind really can't blow through.
Right,
it's,
right.
It's just basically a heat sink.
How come it hasn't filled up with water yet?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because one of the big headlines from last year when California had torrential rains, a lot of Death Valley was closed because the roads and the natural wonders were so damaged by the unprecedented amount of rain.
Wow.
They couldn't reopen for months. So I actually wanted to drive out there because seeing the picture of Badwater Basin, which is just these, you know, like almost kind of salt flats. If you saw the pictures on the news where it was, you know, feet of water in this place where it had never been seen before in our lifetime, you know, people flocked just to see that. But I would say that California is a safe bet because you've got Badwater Basin at negative 200 foot elevation, and then you've got Mount Whitney at 20,000 feet. So the difference between those two, I can't imagine a state in the contiguous U.S. that has a bigger difference.
Just running through them, I was thinking, what's Mount Rainier? How high is that?
It's like 14,000 and some
change. Okay, and that's not, you know, the tallest of the tallest of the Adirondacks is around 17, I think. Yeah, so let's go with California. The great state of California for
six slug bugs on California.
Six of those, please.
Okay, 6 points on states. What state in a contiguous U.S. has the biggest difference in elevation between its highest and lowest points? Team says for 6 points, California. Answer, California.
Yes!
Huzzah!
Nicely done.
Well done, Kelly.
Yep.
This is why we always listen to Kelly.
Mount Whitney. Mount Whitney slightly higher in elevation in comparison to Mount Williamson. And by the way, the highest U.S. peak overall, I think we've talked about this before on the podcast, Denali, a.k.a. Mount McKinley in Alaska.
In Alaska,
and do you know the state having the lowest high point?
Oh, Florida.
It's got to be Delaware.
No, Florida.
The lowest high point.
It is Florida.
And I know exactly where it is. It's in the Central Sandstone Ridge. It's at a place called Bach Tower, and it's about 300 feet above sea level.
Yeah, and I would just like everyone to remember my contribution to this conversation.
In the post show, I will regale you with a fascinating anecdote about the Florida Native Plant Society and the highest points of elevation in Florida.
Oh,
okay. Look forward to that in the post show. Quotes how we close out round number one. Oscar Wilde wrote, "There's only one thing in the world worse than being talked about." And that is, what four words?
I think we all have a sense of what this is. Oscar Wilde.
This couldn't have possibly applied to any of you people, by the way.
Let's 3, 2, 1 it, and then let's talk about our friend Oscar Wilde.
Yes, let's.
All righty. So when we count the team in with 3, 2, 1, it means they basically know the answer. They're going to say it in unison. In 3, 2, 1...
Not being talked about.
So Oscar Wilde was a wit slinger of uncommon
skill.
One might say remarkable.
Well, yeah, I think he was the foremost wit of his generation and paid the price for it. He sort of took the same model that was created by Beau Brummel about a generation before. Beau Brummel was the guy who rose to fame because of his wit, invented basically the precursor to the modern suit and trousers, was a friend of the Prince Regent, and then went too far, got out of favor with the Prince Regent, fell into gambling debt. Anyway, Oscar Wilde also had a pretty tragic end to his life.
Yes, and Kelly will appreciate that there's a great reference to Oscar Wilde in the show Red Dwarf. The character of Ace Rimmer says, in response to another character getting something correct, he says, "You're sharper than a page of Oscar Wilde witticisms that's been rolled up to a point, dipped in lemon juice, and jabbed into someone's eye." But my favorite work of Oscar Wilde is the picture of Dorian Gray, often misquoted as the portrait of Dorian Gray. And it's a great allegory. But if you ever read the introduction to this book, I actually shared it with my stepdaughter a few months ago, walking around Powell's down in Portland, Oregon, looking at their used books. And we found a great copy of the picture of Dorian Gray. And I read the foreword, which talks about the purpose and meaning of art, and that art, by definition, cannot, in Wilde's opinion, have utility. If it has utility, it ceases to be art. And he ends his foreword with, "All art is useless." And when he says useless in that context, he means without utility. You can't use art for some, you know, function or purpose. Sure. The purpose of art is to just be art. And I've always loved that perspective that he shares. And he lived true to that and paid a very, very high price, as you say, Omen, to hold true to that ideal. So I think it's remarkable how much of his work has survived, considering where his life ended.
Kelly, have you ever performed in any Oscar Wilde? I imagine you'd be...
Well, it's funny because I've wanted to be in The Importance of Being Earnest, but have just never had the opportunity. But that's one of that play is amazing. And no, I was just going to say, obviously, Wilde is appreciated as he is referenced in one of the great Smith songs, The Cemetery Gates.
James, on that note, I think we'd like to put three arrests for moving about too much on a Sunday on the phrase not being talked about.
Nice.
Okay. Quotes, Oscar Wilde wrote, "There's only one thing in the world worse than being talked about, and that is what four words." Team says for 3 points, not being talked about. The answer is, of course, not being talked about.
Yeah.
Very nice.
My favorite Oscar Wilde quote is, "We are all laying in the gutter, but some of us are looking toward the stars."
Very nice.
Wow. Well, now it's time for today's bonus question. The rules for the bonus question are a bit different. Here's what we have in store. The answer will be in the form of a number. The players may not know the exact answer to the bonus question, but that's okay. The idea is for them to give their best guess. At live Last Call Trivia shows, the top 50% of teams that get the closest to the exact numbered answer we're looking for, they win one bonus point. Our trivia team, they just have to get within the predetermined range that our writing team set as acceptable to get the bonus point. And here's the question. How old was Oscar Wilde when he died of meningitis?
Oh, goodness.
Well, he wasn't particularly old.
Yeah, I was going to say not very.
I would say 45 max.
Oh, that's higher than I thought.
Well, maximum. I'm happy to walk that back. I think he was at least 35.
I thought he was in like his lower 40s. My 41 was what jumped into my mind.
I could live with 38.
Could you?
I honestly didn't think that he had hit 40.
Really?
I didn't. I don't know why I feel that way. I don't have any evidence to support that. But I felt like whenever I heard how old he was, you know, it was shockingly young.
Didn't he contract meningitis as a result of prison conditions?
I thought it was because he was in jail, yeah.
Yeah, because he'd been thrown into jail and it was terrible conditions.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the good news is we're all pretty much in the same narrow range. So, Kelly, you're saying 38, DJ, you said 41. Maybe we just say 39, 40, 39 and a half?
James, how would you rule on half numbers? Are we supposed to give our answer in months?
I mean, you know, I don't think there's any rule that says it has to be an integer, you know.
You know what's going to happen? We're going to give a half, and it's going to be the half that puts us out of the range. That's going to be our punishment for giving a half year.
Why don't we say 39?
39.
39 years old. I think it's a little low, but I think it's still probably within the range. Yeah. He was very prolific, you know, early on and then came to a...
I know it seems like he must be older because he wrote so much and accomplished so much, but I think, you know, he's one of those folks who...
It was also the 1800s, you know.
Yeah, people had to work soon before they died of consumption.
Before they died of meningitis, yeah.
Before they...
James, let's go. All right, so 39.
Okay. So the bonus was, how old was Oscar Wilde when he died of meningitis? The team is going to say 39 years of age. The answer, 46. And the range we were looking for was anywhere on the high end, up to 54. On the low end, 38.
Uh-huh.
No!
Maybe 39 and a half, if you wanted to go that way, would have qualified for the bonus point. And you guys get the bonus point, so nicely done. Wow.
All of our answers were in the range, though. So how about that? Kelly at the low end.
Yeah,
Omen almost spot on.
So
right on.
46, you said, James.
And I'm surprised he was that old. Like, I remember thinking, like, wow, he was so young and, you know, I
well,
don't know.
Well, he had a youthful appearance.
I'm sure that's what Kelly was thinking.
He had a youthful spirit.
That he was a
youthful spirit.
Kelly, have you been looking at tin types of Oscar Wilde all this time?
Have you been in my bedroom, DJ? Goodness gracious.
All right, so moving on to round number two. Nicely done with the bonus question there. The questions in the second round are always themed to a specific topic. Today's theme, common bonds.
Oh, good.
Ooh,
I like these.
We like that.
And
except
actually,
we,
the
we
point...
lost DJ. He's still laughing about Oscar Wilde.
No, I'm laughing about Omen and thinking that Oscar Wilde's appearance had anything to do with why Kelly thought he died so young. I can't.
He's struggling, folks. He is, in fact, struggling. And we're just going to let him kind of try to burn that off as we move through to common bonds. And in this round, round number two, the point wager options have updated to 2, 5, or 7 points. And just like the first round, as you heard, the team has to decide how to use those three wagers with these three questions. And by the way, given the nature of today's theme, common bonds, the category for all three questions in round two will be common bonds.
Oh.
So we're just common bonds all around here.
Okay.
Okay.
And we're starting off with this question in round number two. Also the name of a record label launched by Led Zeppelin. What alliterative term refers to a final performance or creative work?
Okay.
I was not aware that that was a record label created by Led Zeppelin, but I
was not either, but I feel like there's only one logical choice.
I agreed. DJ?
Are we going to 3-2 on it? We are not, according to that sad meerkat face.
I need the question again. I couldn't parse it.
He was laughing way too hard.
I kind of short-circuited, and I'm hung up on what a tin type of Oscar Wilde would look like.
I was
going to
say, the question, DJ, was if a tin type of Oscar Wilde created a record label, what would it have been called? No.
But it did have to do with a record label. Also the name of a record label launched by Led Zeppelin. What alliterative term refers to a final performance or creative work?
Yeah, I can continue on this with you.
Now he's rebooted. We put it in. Him in rice for half an hour, and he's back.
Yeah, that's the key. Kind of just pops back on after a while. Okay, in 3, 2, 1.
Swan song. Sort of a bizarre phrase. Yeah. I don't think swans actually do a swan song before they die. Like, I think that's not a malapropism. No, a wrongly attributed...
An old wives' tale, perhaps?
Swan behavior.
Swan song. Well, maybe they only... You know what? I think James is going to give us the origin of the phrase swan song, so I shan't make up an origin story.
Did you ever...
Unless you want me to, and then it'll be wrong. It'll be funny.
Did you ever read that book, The Trumpeter Swan?
Is that a book?
It's a book. It's a fabulous book about a swan who doesn't have a voice and learns to play the trumpet and his adventures.
Nice.
Yeah. Interesting book.
Oh.
I think the only book I've ever read about a swan was The Ugly Duckling.
That's a goose.
Oh, is it a goose? Then I don't think I've ever read
a
book about a swan.
No,
I thought it was a swan.
Yeah, it's a swan.
Yeah, it's an ugly duckling grows up to be a beautiful swan.
If I wrote it, it'd be a goose and it'd start as an ugly duckling and grow up and also be an ugly goose.
Swole.
Ugly Goose should definitely be in the running for our next team name.
No.
Ugly Goose. Ugly Goose song. I'm writing it down.
Song. So I'm thinking that swans, you know, lots of birds have song. And I
last
can...
call.
Oh, too bad I can't finish this origin story. No.
Jake. I think we should put seven swans a-laying on swan song.
Is it not seven swans swimming?
I think he was trying
I'm
to
sure
mix
they're
up
swimming
goose
too,
and
Omen.
Swan
I mean,
because
let's.
You mixed up goose and swan.
They do a lot of things, Omen. They do a lot
of
things.
They do a lot of things, James.
He's doing the whole origin story with the laying. It's okay. All right. Common Bonds, also the name of a record label launched by Led Zeppelin. What alliterative term refers to a final performance or creative work? Team says for 7 points, swan song. The answer, swan song.
Yes.
Hey. Huzzah.
Yep. Nice. Yeah, so actually, according to folklore, swans sing most beautifully just before they die. So the phrase came to be used to describe somebody who was leaving in style. And actually, it can be found as far back as the works of Plato, Aristotle, and Cicero. Believe it or not.
Really? So that far
Shakespeare,
back?
Shakespeare included the idea of a swan song as well. So there you go. All right. Common Bonds, as we continue here. What novel in James Patterson's Alex Cross series shares its name with a shootout board game released by Milton Bradley in 1971? 3 minutes on the clock now.
Novel James Patterson, Alex Cross series. Okay, so James Patterson is a kind of a thriller, political spy type writer. Is that right?
Yeah, I know this one for sure.
Oh, great. I can't name a James Patterson book or a board game.
I can remember the commercials. Omen, did you ever see the commercials?
I know
these?
What this is. I actually had it,
really?
And it's a fantastic.
Did you have it?
Yes,
okay.
It's an amazing board game. Very.
It really, it's.
You couldn't
it's
do it
It's
today.
Just kind of absurd, right? Like, it's really, really fun.
Also.
And it's one of those games that I don't think you'd make today because it's probably too dangerous because it involved little ball bearings.
Yes.
But yeah, it was so much fun. I used to play it all the time.
Why do I not know what this is?
Omen, do you think we can sing it in unison? Can you sing the commercial jingle?
Oh, I don't know. I could sing for you the Jethro Tull song of the same name.
No. So it's Crossfire.
Da
na 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 na. Crossfire.
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 Yeah, so
yeah.
Kelly, the...
Nice job, James. Nicely done.
And it was like a horrifying commercial because the kid who loses gets like spun off into this like 3D void. That
yeah, totally. Like sucked into a black hole.
Kelly, imagine, if you will, a little plastic arena about a foot square, maybe a foot and a...
Vaguely octagonal.
A bit square. Yeah, octagonal. Okay. And you have devices that look a lot like pistols mounted to four sides. Those pistols fire by a spring mechanism, steel ball bearings. So already very safe. And then what you do is you spin a, like a top... sort of a steel magnetic weird top spinny thing in the middle of it.
Okay.
And your goal is to shoot that off into the other person's trough moat.
It's a little bit like air hockey with magnets and shooting ball bearings instead of smacking it with a paddle. But it's kind of the same idea. You're trying to shoot the spinning top piece. It's spindly. It almost has a spidery look to it. So the ball bearings cause it to spin.
You can't just
shoot it and have it move opposite the ball bearing, you know, using Newtonian physics. You got to be really strategic, and you're shooting a lot of ball bearings at once. Like, they keep falling into a trough and you keep loading. You you had to scoop them up and load them back in.
It's the opposite
so
of hungry,
kinetic motion.
It's the opposite of hungry hippo.
Exactly. Okay. So wait, is the shooting happening
last
one
call.
At a time or simultaneously?
No,
simultaneously.
All at
hungry
once.
Hippo.
Everybody's
so
shooting all at once.
It is the opposite of hungry hippo. Yeah. It's like a free-for-all.
Yeah, it's very frenetic because you're scooping and shooting. And Alex Cross, right? The pun, Crossfire.
Probably. James.
I don't know how I've never heard of this.
James, we'd like to put 5 ball bearings on Caught in the Crossfire, Baker Street Avenue.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
That's the Jethro Tull song.
We
had to get that in. Common Bonds, what novel in James Patterson's Alex Cross series shares its name with a shootout board game released by Milton Bradley in 1971 and the Jethro Tull song? Crossfire. Crossfire is correct.
Yes.
Huzzah.
Good job, you guys.
Nicely done.
Yeah, nicely done. And how about this fun fact? Along Came a Spider was the first Alex Cross book ever published by James Patterson, and that was back in 1993. Since then, there have been more than 20 sequels and a blockbuster movie. Certainly a successful franchise. All right.
Right on.
Common bonds to close out round number two now. What is both a poisonous element and the on-screen companion to Old Lace?
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of plays we've wanted to be in.
Yeah, right. A poisonous element? Poisonous element, yeah. DJ, think about all your classic poisons. You know, imagine it's the 1800s and you're...
Oh, yeah.
Imagine you're Sherlock Holmes solving a poisoning case. What would be the
imagine
easiest poisoning case?
Imagine you have a wife and the wife is feeding you pancakes.
Oh, my God, Kelly. That was...
And slowly over time, you build up a resistance to this poison. So instead of killing you, she somehow manages to make you indestructible to this. So that when the real killer comes in the night and overdoses you, you're the only one to survive because you've built up an immunity. This is a plot to something. Do you not recognize this?
Pancakes? I heard pancakes and then I got distracted by visions of syrup. So I was trying to parse Old Lace. So the first thing that sprang to mind was arsenic.
Yeah.
But... I can't. What's the reference to Old Lace?
The name of the play, Arsenic and Old Lace. There's a famous play and a movie that may or may not star Jane Fonda or someone who looks like her, and
gotcha.
The name of it is Arsenic and Old Lace.
And by whom is the play?
Very famous written. Playwright.
No, it doesn't matter.
Very, very famous.
Yeah.
Kelly, is it not a bit of a farce?
I mean, it sounds like a farce, but I want to know who wrote it.
You know, there's a lot of questions happening all at once right now.
I don't know who wrote it, but we do know that it's a classic of the repertory theaters. It's an old standby. It's like Noise is Off, but older.
Just like that.
In its popularity. I'm not saying that stylistically it's the same because it might not be, but definitely.
Are you trying to tell me that all the directors I worked with had more taste than to do the plays that everybody does? Because I've never encountered this particular show.
Well, there's only so many... productions of the Vagina Monologues that you can do, GJ. Sometimes you have to do something a little older.
Don't dare somebody on that or they'll take you up on it.
Oh, wow.
James, I think...
Good night, everybody.
I think we should put two...
Vagina Monologues.
On... Thank you. On arsenic. Two Vaginas Monologue. Thank you, DJ.
Yeah. Right. Alrighty. So, common bonds, what is both a poisonous element and the on-screen companion to Old Lace? Team says, for their two remaining points, arsenic. The answer, arsenic.
Yes.
Huzzah.
Yep. Basically, these two women are, like, killing these guys that they're putting ads out there saying... Oh, you know, we have a room to rent, and then they're drugging them with arsenic and putting it in their tea and all this kind of stuff and killing them. And that's where the arsenic comes into play.
I didn't hear anything about pancakes, James.
Well, I just used pancakes as an example. But no, I'm thinking of some... it sounds to me like an Agatha Christie story where someone is slowly trying to kill her husband by giving him these doses of arsenic. But really what she's doing is building up an immunity in him so that later on, like somehow there's this twist where he's the only one to survive this major arsenic poisoning because she inadvertently built up in his system an immunity to the poison.
Sounds like you should go downtown and pitch that right now, Kelly.
Well, I was going to say, if nobody's actually written this, here's $1 million plot idea
for
you.
Yeah, we just gave it away.
I'm not sure that arsenic works that way. Can you build up a tolerance like that?
Yes, because it was in this famous story by a very famous playwright.
And they could never make a mistake.
I'll play the pancake.
All right, our final question now. This is a multi-part question. It's also the only question that our team can actually lose points on. How is that? Well, the trivia team has to make a decision here. Will they wager 5 points, or will they not take any risk and not wager any points? The option is either 5 or 0. And they have to get every portion of the final correct in order to earn those 5 points if they wager them. Furthermore, if they miss a single portion of this final question, then they'll lose the 5 points that they may here wager. It's a multi-part question, so we'll give them 5 minutes to decide on their answer. Beforehand, let's give the team an update as to where their score currently stands. And the thinking is that should help them decide from a reference point standpoint, do they want to wager those 5 points? Through the first 4 episodes of Parliament Number 8, and a parliament is a grouping of 10 episodes, by the way, here at the Last Call Trivia Podcast. Through the first 4 episodes of Parliament Number 8, the team has an average score of 20 points. 20. And right now, the team has 23 points out of a total max score of 30. So we're outpacing our average a little bit, and now we've got this final question to contend with. Television. Place the following 2010s TV sitcoms in order by the total number of episodes that aired from most to least. So, again, these are 2010 TV sitcoms, that decade, the 2010s, and I need you to rank in order by the total number of episodes that aired from most to least. TV sitcoms now. A, The Big Bang Theory. B, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. C, Modern Family. And D, Parks and Recreation.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
All right.
5 minutes. 5 minutes on the clock now.
So if we know roughly how many seasons each of these had, then we can intuit a reasonable guess as to how many episodes aired, because these are all network television shows, so they're not, they are all on streaming and they're quite popular on streaming, but they were not streaming shows.
Yeah, so they're either going to be 13 episode orders or 26 episode orders,
right? Or 20, or sometimes they have shortened episodes, right? A shortened order, so like a first season could be 13 and then they do a full order the next season, and then a final season can sometimes be 22. So it depends. Sometimes there's a little bit of flexibility. But we can start with an estimate of the number of seasons.
Your methodology is absolutely brilliant. But my problem is I can't give you an estimate of seasons.
I can give you two pretty closely, okay. I believe.
Let's start at the top. Can we try Big Bang Theory? Is that one of them, DJ?
Yeah. So Big Bang Theory is the TV series from which we get the character Sheldon.
Yes.
And Sheldon got a spinoff
Young Sheldon.
That's actually just about to wrap up called Young Sheldon. They're entering in their final season. So I think that Big Bang Theory had like 7 or 8 seasons. I think it was on for quite a long while.
Okay. What about Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
So Big Bang Theory was, I believe, CBS. Brooklyn Nine-Nine was NBC. And it also had a really long run. One of their principal actors just passed away not too long ago, tragically. Yeah. He was a phenomenal actor. But I believe they had 7 seasons. I believe Brooklyn Nine-Nine ended after 7 seasons.
If you say 7, I would believe it. But that's the only show on the list that I've actually watched. And I feel like it was fewer than that. And I also feel like part of the issue was they switched its time slot. Like they suddenly moved it from whatever night to like Saturday night and it failed. So if you said Big Bang is 7 to 8 and Brooklyn Nine-Nine is 7, I would put Brooklyn Nine-Nine in it less.
Well, I think that Brooklyn Nine-Nine is less than Big Bang, but I don't think by much.
Okay.
And I've also watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I mean, come on, Peralta. But my recollection is on streaming that there's 7 seasons of it.
Let's keep going.
Pick the season.
So Modern Family was extraordinarily long running, and you can, as evidenced by that, Cam and the two gentlemen, the couple, they adopt a baby in like season 2 or 3, and she is 12 or 13 when the series wraps up. So I think it's at least 10, maybe 11 or 12 seasons.
Yeah, I would put this in at number one.
Absolutely.
You know, just on feeling.
And then
I'd buy that.
And then Parks and Rec was actually one that I watched pretty religiously. It's on the shorter side because it was
I think it's only got 6 seasons.
Canceled and brought back or something, and they skipped time at one point. The last season takes place 4 or 5 years later than everything else. So I think you're right, 5, 6.
I'm pretty sure they had a total of 6 seasons for Parks and Rec. It was shorter than The Office, which it was the same creator and same model.
Okay, so I think we're in agreement that Modern Family is definitely the longest running. Big Bang is definitely the second longest running. So you guys seem pretty sure that it would be Brooklyn Nine-Nine followed by Parks and Rec. Those are the only two that I would have trouble like.
I think
parsing.
It's C-A-B-D in terms of how James gave them to us. So Modern Family, Big Bang, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Rec. Let me ask you another question
just to be devil's advocate here. When I remember watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I do not feel like, could they have been the shorter seasons that you're talking about? And perhaps Parks and Rec had full order. I've never seen Parks and Rec, but if they
I
had
think Parks
six
and Rec
seasons
are shorter seasons. Certainly the first season
episodes.
Of Parks and Rec is short.
Okay. All right.
I'm pretty sure the first season of Parks and Rec is 13 episodes. Similar to The Office. The first season of The Office is only 6.
I think that we don't know enough about any of them to follow this methodology to anywhere that is going to get us close.
Well, we're not estimating the total number, right? It's just which had the most. So,
correct.
I mean, I feel...
I think we've got them in the right order.
I think we bet the points.
Last call. Oh,
let's bet them. James?
Kelly? We listen to you.
I'm with you. I just... Right.
Are you really with us?
I mean, as far as this goes.
James, we're...
All right, James.
We're going to start with Modern Family at the top. Follow that up with The Big Bang Theory. Followed up with Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And following that up with Parks and Recreation.
You're going to wager the 5.
We are wagering the 5, James.
We're wagering the 5.
Alrighty. So, I can't wait. I just got to figure this out. We got to get right down to it with the back end, because I think that was where you guys had the most question. It was Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it was Parks and Rec, the whole thing. So, in terms of the least episodes of these here 4 sitcoms, is it true that it was Parks and Rec that had the fewest here? That's what you guys say. Yes, that is correct. Parks and Rec actually did have the fewest episodes of any of these shows with 126. Next up, you guys say Brooklyn Nine-Nine. 153. Yes, that is correct. 153 episodes for Brooklyn Nine-Nine. All right, up next. Again, we wager the 5 points here. You guys say that The Big Bang Theory was in the number 2 spot. No, I'm sorry. Oh, actually, The Big Bang Theory had the most episodes out of all these sitcoms with 279. Modern Family had 251.
Wow, really close.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. So Modern Family must have had shorter seasons than Big Bang Theory, Omen.
Oh, why are you talking to me?
Modern Family was the only one that I didn't know.
Well, it was
in terms of the length of season.
It was on forever, and I don't know about the different networks and things. The only seasons I relate to were winter, spring, summer, and fall.
Well, nonetheless, my original feeling, if I had had a yellow piece of paper like Kelly, I would have written down Big Bang Theory having the most just because it was on for a really long time. But again, it's only 20 episodes difference. That's one season. Or a difference in season length. So, I mean, it's really close. It's really, really close. And maybe Modern Family was on, like, they covered a longer period of time in the show. So it's a good effort. Wrong, but a good effort.
A good wrong effort.
Yep.
Describes so much of our history. A good wrong effort.
A good wrong effort. Yeah, that should be a t-shirt somewhere for sure. Our team.
Should definitely be a team name.
Wild Moose Chase had a final score today of 18 out of a total possible 30 points. And thank you so much to all of our listeners for tuning in for the show and for playing along. If you enjoyed it, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share today's episode. If you're looking for even more trivia fun, and how could you not be? Head over to LastCallTrivia.com to check out our live shows, private events, trivia card game, and more. We'll be back next week for another episode of the Last Call Trivia Podcast. Until then, stay curious.
I I have a new goal in life, which is when I die, I want people to say about me, I didn't realize he was that old. I thought he was a lot younger.
Nice. Yeah, we'll look at a tin type of you too, Omen. So I have to say that when Big Bang Theory came out, I absolutely hated that show because I frequently would have people tell me, oh, you're so much like Sheldon. And when the show first came out, I didn't watch it. Huh. And so I then saw an episode and saw Sheldon, and I was like, I am so completely offended by by you likening, because he's at
you're
least in the early
like
seasons.
Carson.
Well, no, but the character, like the way he behaves
but
and his mannerisms,
Sheldon
apparently.
Sheldon is Jim Parsons. He's not acting.
Well, I understand that. But at the time, he was such a distinctive personality on TV that it made quite the splash. And so I was really offended by the characterization, that this absurd level of nerdity and whatnot. That offense lasted for many years until I started listening to our show.
Mm.
And now I get it.
Well, I was going to say, if there's one thing that's similar, I would say it's the precision of recall, which you have and use a lot. That would be the only similarity that I
I appreciate that. That's a lot more gracious than it was phrased to me when people first started making the comparison. But absolutely, I've seen a few episodes since then. And certainly, you know, he's very popular, especially in the last couple of seasons of the show as it wound down. And going back and listening to our show, every once in a while, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was definitely a Sheldon moment.
Well,
James has the most ridiculous smirk on his face right now, by the way. I don't think I've ever seen more smug self-satisfaction on his face. I really wish that you could see it, Fred.
Have you watched that program, James?
I have. I've seen The Big Bang Theory, yes.
What do you think about
Sheldon's mannerisms?
What do you think about the comparison?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you thought about some of the more idiosyncratic aspects of the Sheldon character, like the fact that, because like to Kelly's point, it's really not so much about comparing the actual actor to it. It's more like, you know, Sheldon is super specific about the way you wouldn't want to make the wrong Star Trek versus Star Wars reference, for example, because he's going to say, actually, no, that's not right. It's this as opposed to that. You know,
wait, is he the one who hosts the show about flags?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so just substitute flags for any one of DJ's specific interests.
DJ,
and that excitement about something very mundane is...
Didn't you correct me on the location of Starfleet?
Yeah, I was just about to use that example in our pre-show conversation. Omen made an offhanded comment about Starfleet being located in San Diego, and I perked up. I pushed my glasses up on my nose, and I said, no, it's not. It's in San Francisco.
Well,
and Omen's like, no, I think it's in San Diego. And I'm like, no, it's in San Francisco. Omen looked it up, and sure enough, Starfleet is headquartered in San Francisco.
Well, DJ, that's why you're on this show.
Hold on. Another similarity is that I don't think Sheldon would ever give up on something and would just beat it to death. Like, we're still an hour later talking about the Starfleet example and needing to prove that he was
right
about it.
I'm in this picture and I don't like it.
Yeah, but this is only a 45-minute show, so.
Yeah, by the way, Omen, I'm on this show because the Last Call Trivia team are a group of warm-hearted, charitable souls.
Well, ain't that the truth. Now, speaking of charity, I promised to regale you all with my fascinating story about some plants here in Florida. Imagine my delight and rapture when I received the quarterly publication from the Florida Native Plant Society and saw an article about a plant that only exists, its only habitat is here in the wonderful Sunshine State. And not only is it only here in Florida, it is only on certain ridges on this sandstone ridge that runs north-south along the center of Florida. Well, the theory is that, as you probably know, most of Florida is sand, and because of the way the ocean currents work, it is a catch point for sands that are being blown about in the waves, and it has gradually accumulated sand over the millennia. Huh. Back in the ancient times, all there was of modern-day Florida was a couple of little islands that were these pieces of sandstone sticking up out of the ground. And those plants, these specific plants, evolved their form on these islands that were disconnected from any other part of land and developed a very particular way of interacting, and they were able to deal with the salt. Over time, the peninsula built up around those islands, but those plants never moved off of those islands. And so in modern-day Florida, they exist only on these little, you could call them mountaintops if you're being extremely generous, and nowhere else, because that's where they evolved, and they are older than the modern state of Florida that we, as we picture it now, with the peninsula. Yeah.
And what are these plants?
Oh, they're nothing special. I forget what they're called. They're little endangered leafy shrubby things.
That was a very anticlimactic end to a very exciting story. But
Thank you. The
thing that I thought of when you started talking about it was remembering when we talked about North Carolina and that little tiny area that is home to, you know, 99% of Venus flytraps.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's just this very... There's something very specific, like you said, about the sandy soil, and it's under pine trees, and like kind of how the ecosystem comes together. And they've got an issue with poaching, because people will come in and try
to steal the Venus flytraps.
The Venus flytraps out of this native environment. But it's interesting that, you know, you get just a little bit out of that perfect environment and they're not thriving, just like if you get off of your little, you know, Florida island.
I think that the four of us are a good analogy to this phenomenon, that we have evolved into this extremely niche ecosystem where we are cared for by the unique conditions created by Last Call Trivia, and we will only thrive in this environment.
Well, this is why I so often refer to needing to hit a minimum point score to get the antidote, because they want to prevent us from overgrowing our enclosure. And the only way to do that effectively with plant matter like we are is to effectively poison our roots very mildly and gently over time.
With arsenic.
So that, much like arsenic, we just kind of get reined in. And the only way for us to counter that is to remain the charming intellectual titans that you hear every week on this podcast.
I'm photosynthesizing here.
Yeah, is to get a healthy dose of the antidote. So basically, if we don't do well enough, Last Call says, you guys can go ahead and shrink a little bit. Try harder next week. It keeps us motivated.
That's right.
It's true.
I'm doing it for the cookies.
Yeah. Thank you, Adam.
All right. Well, that will conclude this episode of the Last Call Trivia Podcast. You guys can start to poison the roots here. And remember to like, subscribe, and
share
this episode with your friends, as you're always a welcome part of the team at the Last Call Trivia Podcast.